Nicholas Taleb. Predictably Irrational: The Hidden Forces That Shape Our Decisions by Dan Ehrlich. How We Know What Isn't So: The Fallibility of Human Reason in Everyday Life by Thomas Gilovich. Being Wrong: Adventures in the Margin of Error by Catherine Schultz. 15.21. Women Rule. In Chapter 12, I discussed women's overwhelming market power and the failure of most businesses to address with vigor the strategic opportunity thus presented. And, via the squint test, I suggested that an exec team ought to more or less look like the market being served. That is, there is an important market size argument for sky-high female representation at the top. Over half would be a logical conclusion. But that's the least of it, or at least far from the whole story. The point of this section goes far beyond gender-based market power. The point here is that it appears that women are, in general, more effective leaders than men. As I say farther along, that does not amount to a suggestion that male leaders should be shown the door. It does amount to a forceful suggestion that if women are not solidly represented in top management and in the leader portfolio in general, you are making an enormous strategic mistake. You are, well, being stupid. 15.21.1. Women Rule: The Rule of 56. McKinsey & Company found that the international companies with more women on their corporate boards far outperformed the average company in return on equity and other measures. Operating profit was 56% higher. Nicholas Kristof, Twitter, Women and Power, The New York Times. 56 is a rather formidable number, eh? Formidable, hell, it boggles the imagination. And the source, extensive McKinsey & Company research, is as close to unimpeachable as it gets. 15.21.2. Women's Demonstrated Leadership Performance. What immediately follows is a small but powerful sample of evidence and opinions of women in leadership roles. 1. Harvard Business Review. Women are rated higher in fully 12 of the 16 competencies that go into outstanding leadership, and two of the traits where women outscored men to the highest degree, taking initiative and driving for results, have long been thought of as particularly male strengths. Comment: 12 out of 16. 2. Lawrence A. Pfaff and Associates. 2 years, 941 managers. 672 male, 269 female. 360 degree feedback. Women better in 20 of 20 categories. 15 of 20 with statistical significance, including decisiveness, planning, and setting standards, typically considered male strengths. Quote unquote, men are not rated significantly higher by any of the raters in any of the areas measured. Comment: 20 of 20. 3. As leaders, women rule. New studies find that female managers outshine their male counterparts in almost every measure. Special report, Business Week. 4. Research by McKinsey & Company suggests that to succeed, start by promoting women. Nicholas Kristof, Twitter, Women and Power, The New York Times. 5. In my experience, women make much better executives than men. Kip Tindall, CEO, Container Store. Uncontainable. How passion, commitment, and conscious capitalism built a business where everyone thrives. A few years ago, Container Store was named the number one best company to work for in America. It invariably finishes in the top 10, and its financials are more than sound. 6. Women's strengths match new economy imperatives, as reported in Stanford professor Judy B. Rosner's book, America's Competitive Secret, Women Managers. Women's typical leadership style. Link rather than rank workers. favor interactive, collaborative leadership style. Empowerment beats top-down decision-making. Sustain fruitful collaborations. Comfortable with sharing information. See redistribution of power as victory, not surrender. Favor multidimensional feedback. Value technical and interpersonal skills, individual and group contributions equally. Readily accept ambiguity. Honor intuition as well as pure rationality. Inherently flexible. Appreciate cultural diversity. Rosner's research is a particular note in 2018. The positive assessment of women's leadership skills in general is likely to be far more pronounced given emerging changes in organizational structure and overall economic and social network structure. In today's topsy-turvy settings, where traditional rigid hierarchy is no longer ubiquitous and is often downright counterproductive, women's demonstrated relative strengths are more important than ever. 15.21.3 Reflection, a 20-year-plus enterprise performance obsession. This topic has been a passion of mine since 1996, two full decades and then some. My reasons have little or nothing to do with social justice. Social justice issues concerning women are very important to me, but not a principal dimension of this analysis. My interest has everything to do with organization effectiveness per se, my career obsession. The attributes more likely to be found among women than men are especially fit for our emerging times and organizational forms. Forms which de-emphasize command and control regimes for getting things done and increasingly emphasize cooperative jumbled forms. And, recall, as discussed in Chapter 12, women do indeed buy more or less everything in both the consumer and in the United States commercial categories. Everything argued here, and I've said this before but it bears repeating, requires the words more likely to be found or typically. There are many men who deal brilliantly with ambiguity, but typically women are more comfortable with convoluted non-linear situations than men are. For example, at a seminar I attended on this topic, I clearly remember a remark made by a prominent movie director. It went like this. When I read a script by an unidentified writer, I guarantee you I can predict the author's gender 9 out of 10 times. Frankly, 10 out of 10. Women authors' products include twists and turns and hopelessly tangled human relationships and so on. The men's scripts are down the center of the road, linear to a fault, and often it is a fault. My aha moment. There was more or less an aha moment that, in retrospect, started me down the path to examining women's leadership tendencies that differ from men's. It occurred at one of my company's four-day Northern California executive seminars. One attendee, a senior exec at the travel services giant Rosenbluth International, had made his bones doing, with great success, big systems sales for AT&T. The conversation went like this. Him, Tom, I had one secret. Me, which was? His response, which I remember quite clearly, hence close to verbatim. I hired women. You see, all the real purchase decision analysis is effectively made 2 or 3 levels down in the client organization by fairly junior staffers. My guys were typically all hung up on hierarchy and rank. They wouldn't dirty their hands with the denizens of the lower reaches. The women I brought on board couldn't care less about name, rank, or serial number. Org charts were for dummies. So the women would invest immense amounts of time developing relationships in every nook and cranny in the bowels of the client organization. In, literally, Tom, 9 out of 10 cases, that investment iced the sale. The client VP of purchasing, almost without fail, did whatever his staff proposed that he do. All the guys had wasted God alone knows how much time trying to suck up to the man, but the man was essentially irrelevant. Thence, though I didn't know it at the time, my career as a performance-based women's advocate had begun. 15.21.4 Tech 2 Tech has historically been a wasteland for women. One hopes that things are changing. But in any event, there is data, a sample of which is presented here, that paints a rosy picture of women in tech. Women-led private tech companies, 35% higher return on investment than male-led firms. Women-led tech companies with venture backing, revenues 12% higher than male-led venture-funded companies. 25,000 Kickstarter projects, women-led crowdfunding candidates more likely to get fully funded than male-led candidates. Inc. Magazine, October 2015 cover, Will the Next Steve Jobs Be a Woman? 15.21.5 Small Business Superstars, Women-Owned Businesses. The growth and success of women-owned businesses is one of the most profound changes taking place in the business world today. Margaret Heffernan, How She Does It. More relevant data from Ms. Heffernan. U.S. firms owned or controlled by women, 10.6 million, 48% of all firms. The number of American employees of women-owned businesses exceeds the total number of domestic employees of the bellwether Fortune 500. Growth rate of women-owned firms versus all firms, 3 times higher. Rate of jobs created by women-owned firms versus all firms, 2x as high. Likelihood of women-owned firms staying in business versus all firms, greater than 1.0. Growth rates of women-owned companies with revenues of greater than $1 million and greater than 100 employees versus all firms, 2x higher. 15.21.6 Women's strengths as negotiators, salespersons, investors. Negotiation. From Horacio Falco's story in World Business, May 2006. Say it like a woman. Why the 21st century negotiator will need the female touch. Ability to put themselves in their counterpart's shoes. Comprehensive, attentive, and detailed communication style. Empathy that facilitates trust building. Curious and active listeners. Less competitive for competitiveness's sake attitude. Sense of fairness. Ability to persuade. Collaborative decision makers. Sales. From the back cover of Nikki Joy and Susan Cain Benson's book, Selling is a Woman's Game, 15 Powerful Reasons Why Women Can Outsell Men. Take this quick quiz. Who manages more things at once? Who puts more effort into their appearance? Who usually takes care of the details? Who finds it easier to meet new people? Who asks more questions in a conversation? Who is a better listener? Who has more interest in communication skills? Who is more inclined to get involved? Who encourages harmony and agreement? Who has better intuition? Who works with a longer to-do list? Who enjoys a recap of the day's events? Who is better at keeping in touch with others? Investment. From the Motley Fool's Luann Lofton, in her book, Warren Buffett Invests Like a Girl and Why You Should Too. Women. 1. Trade less than men do. 2. Exhibit less overconfidence, more likely to know what they don't know. 3. Shun risk more than male investors do. 4. Less optimistic, more realistic than their male counterparts. 5. Put in more time and effort researching possible investments. Consider details and alternate points of view. 6. More immune to peer pressure. Tend to make decisions the same way regardless of who's watching. 7. Learn from their mistakes. 8. Have less testosterone than men do, making them less willing to take extreme risks, which, in turn, could lead to less extreme market fluctuations. FYI. Mr. Buffett gave Ms. Lofton's book a sterling review. The evidence just reviewed, then, suggests that women are frequently, in fact more often than not, better negotiators, better salespersons, better investors. 15.21.7 More to come. Girls and young women's rate of outpacing boys and young men on the education front is staggering. Headlines like this one are becoming commonplace. The new gender gap. From kindergarten to grad school, boys are becoming the second sex. Cover story, Business Week. This topic is of supreme importance. Widespread male disenfranchisement could have severe economic and social consequences, and the male-female gap will surely grow at, given the tech tsunami, a particularly politically volatile time. 15.21.8. No, don't toss all the males overboard. The point of these quotes and assessments, collectively, is not to suggest that tomorrow morning you should demote or dismiss all your male managers. Among other things, the research is remarkably clear. The winning formula is gender balance. What the evidence presented here does unmistakably suggest is that women are exceedingly effective leaders, especially in the context of the times. If you do not have top-to-bottom gender balance, with perhaps even a lean toward a female majority, you are missing the boat. The name of the boat is organizational effectiveness, business effectiveness, excellence. 15.22.1. Communication. The 100% rule. The problem with communication is the illusion that it has been accomplished. William H. White. Leaders. Communication failures are 100% your fault. Many bridle at this. Tough. You will never get me to budge. You, leader, are paid first and foremost to get this right. 15.22.2. The uniqueness corollary. 14 equals 14. Suppose you have 14 direct reports. It's your job to figure out why Mr. Smith or Ms. Jones didn't listen or engage. It's up to you to craft an engagement strategy for each individual. 14 people equals 14 different, carefully crafted engagement strategies. Concocting these 14 differentiated approaches is how you earn your pay, or don't. 14 equals 14 is what we routinely expect of teachers. 14 kids equals 14 very radically different learning trajectories, right? How often? Always. Which is hardly to suggest that the average teacher gets an A+ on this, but the notion 14 equals 14 is unassailable. Bottom line, it's worse than you think. One size doesn't fit all. One size never comes within 10 country miles of fitting all. In fact, one size doesn't fit one person over the course of, say, a week. Tom Monday is very different from Tom Thursday. 15.23.1. Apology. I regard apologizing as the most magical, healing, restorative gesture human beings can make. It is the centerpiece of my work with executives who want to get better. Marshall Goldsmith. What got you here won't get you there. How successful people become even more successful. Most magical, healing, restorative centerpiece. Those are extraordinarily powerful words. And Marshall Goldsmith is an extraordinarily powerful voice. He's generally considered the top executive coach. Well, Mr. Goldsmith and I are in complete agreement, but as is so often the case in this book, it's not rocket science and I am stumped. Why in the hell is it so hard to say, I'm sorry? A short set of apology rules. Apology rule number one, do it now. Don't delay. An issue comes up today. And at a meeting, you are a bit more abrupt than you might have been with Joe in front of his peers. So before you go home, drop by Joe's cubicle. Not for a heart-to-heart or any such grand thing, but just for a 30-second nod and acknowledgement that wires may have gotten crossed and that you were the guilty wire-crosser. Trust me, Please, 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 trust me. You just performed an act of immense and lasting power. Apology rule number 2. Do it in person. Obviously, this may not always be possible, but if it is, do it face-to-face. Email is a big no-no. A phone call is 10 times better than an email. But in person, dropping by the cubicle, is 10 times or 100 times better than the call. An apology is an intimate act. Your body language will speak many times more than your words. Apology rule number 3. See rule number 1. Do it now. The apology iron law. Now, now, now. There was once a time when you could have headed off a first-order fiasco with a 90-second drop-by or a 5-minute phone call within a few minutes or hours of the issue arising or coming to your attention. Apology rule number 4. Shut up. Effective apology is mostly about listening. You are mainly, with your "I'm sorry," acknowledging that something went awry. Remember our discussion of the power of acknowledgement. Then let the other person speak until they wear themselves out. Isaiah Crawford, president of the University of Puget Sound, brilliantly said, "It's hard to listen your way into trouble." Obviously, this command is paradoxical. You are there to apologize, but please shut up. Well, the true apology is your presence. That's the acknowledgement bit. The words are secondary, so shut up. Hence my complete guide to apology. Do it now. Do it in person. Do it now. Shut up. 15.23.2. Apology pays, big time. From John Cador, Effective Apology. 1. With a new and forthcoming policy on apologies, Toro, the lawnmower folks, reduced the average cost of settling a claim from $115,000 in 1991 to $35,000 in 2008, and the company hasn't been to trial in 15 years. 2. The VA hospital in Lexington, Massachusetts, developed an approach, totally uncharacteristic in healthcare, to apologizing for errors, even when no patient request or claim was made. In 2000, the systemic mean VA hospital malpractice settlement throughout the United States was $413,000. The Lexington VA hospital settlement number was $36,000, and there were far fewer patient claims to begin with. I am not in the least surprised by either of these examples. FYI, Mr. Cador offers dozens more. As I said above, it is virtually impossible to overstate the power of apology, even when the topic is the likes of a lawnmower accident or a medical error, where the consequences could be grave physical injury or worse. Read, study. Yes, there are entire books on the topic of apology, and this is a very good one. It is another one of those things in the leadership arena that sounds obvious, but in fact is a subject worthy of deep, formal study. Effective Apology: Mending Fences, Building Bridges, and Restoring Trust, by John Cador. 15.24. Leadership Review, The Rule of 4. Leaders, embrace the big 4 big words. Thank you. I'm sorry. How you doing with the big 4? How you doing today with the big 4? 15.25.1. Email. Whoa. Take a deep breath. Wait. The sin of send. 1. Do not push send. Pause. 5 minutes. An hour. Overnight. The world will not come to an end. 2. Do not immediately respond to that instant message unless it is a car accident involving a spouse or child. Pause. Reflect. The world will not come to an end. 3. Responding to that email can wait an hour or 2, or even 3. Can wait a day. Pause. Think. Counsel with others. The world will not come to an end. When I introduced the riff above at the top of a speech, I said, I want to earn my fee times 10 in the first 120 seconds. If you pay attention to this, I guarantee I will have indeed covered my fee times 10 or times 100. I was very serious. There is no honest reader of this book who will not admit to having pushed send prematurely. Rush, 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 oh shit, right? 15.25.2. Email, I am. Excellence, why not? 1. Anyone who puts anything in any email or instant message that might embarrass him or her next week, next month, in 2024, is a damn fool. 2. A sloppy email, etc., is a total piece of crap. Sloppy, ungrammatical, poorly argued, equivocal, could be interpreted multiple ways, flippantly critical of someone, anyone, rude, etc., etc., that is, unprofessional. 3. Assume your boss's boss or your boss's boss's boss will read any email you write. 4. Assume your least supportive colleagues will read any email you write. 5. Assume one or more than one customer will read any email you write. 6. Assume that any clever email you write will go viral. 7. My personal rule. Every email I send is a complete representation of who I am as a professional and, more broadly, who I am as a human being. Medieval times, that is, 1999. Oral hissy fit would mostly evaporate in 4 or 5 days. Modern times. No matter how limited the distribution, any e-communication may go viral in a matter of minutes, maybe even seconds. Not news, just a reminder. Hasty, emotional response is the nightmare scenario. Same rules for personal emails as professional ones. Personal emails frequently end up not being personal. Email excellence. Make this duo a tautology, not an oxymoron. 15.26. Deconstructing leadership. Reductionist leadership training. In general, I am an avowed enemy of reductionist thinking. I prefer wholes to parts. And yet I have come to think that leadership training, as it is ordinarily conceived, is not reductionist enough. We assume away the key components of leadership as almost too obvious to bother with. Bottom line. Leaders need to be good at an extensive set of discrete things that account for 90% of their effectiveness. Effective leadership equals doing specific tasks well. Suggested leadership skill set. Avid practitioner of MBWA, managing by wandering around. Aggressive, fierce listener. Student of listening excellence. Expert at questioning. Expert at helping. So difficult. Expert at building matchless first-line management. Expert at holding productive conversations. Fanatic about clear communications that acknowledge radical individual differences. Master of social media. Master of obsession with acknowledgement. Effective at fast, proactive apology. Excellent presenter. Conscious master of body language. Master, student of hiring. Master of evaluating people. Time manager par excellence. Vigilant concerning overscheduling. Avid student of the process and psychology of influence. Student of organizational politics. Student of decision making. Student of cognitive biases that derail decision making. Brilliantly schooled student and practitioner of negotiation. Fanatic about employee development for 100% of staff. Student of the power of diversity on any and every damn dimension you can name. Aggressive in pursuing gender balance. Insistent on instilling business sense in one and all. Have at it. Effectiveness at such discrete activities must not be avoided or evaded. They are the essence of what you do. They are how you spend your time. They can be studied. They can be practiced. That's it. Leadership chapter completed. No vision, but a bunch of stuff that is virtually guaranteed to work. Getting better at several of these 26 items will improve your leadership effectiveness. Pick one or two or three or four or five and work on them. Start today. Good luck. Epilogue. CODA 2018. My story. I tend to drive a lot of people crazy. I wave my arms like a wild man when I give public presentations to groups of 10 or 10,000. I say wow a lot. I use exclamation marks as if there was no tomorrow. There isn't really. Today is all we have. Live it to the fullest. Be of service now. Trite but true, no one knows what tomorrow will bring, and yesterday is dust. My company logo is a standalone, no text added red exclamation mark. I consider myself, in effect, a red exclamation mark. Tom Peters is the Red Bull of management thinkers. Bo Burlingham, Inc. magazine. A human exclamation point who no longer needs his last name. Nancy Austin on Tom Peters. W. Ross Ashby was the author of The Law of Requisite Variety, referred to earlier and introduced in his classic 1956 book, An Introduction to Cybernetics. The science surrounding LRV is of the highest order and mostly beyond my ability to comprehend. Nonetheless, I am able to loosely translate Ashby's law into a principal prescription for these nutty times. Crazy times call for crazy solutions. 2018. Crazy. Me. You. Our organizations. Crazy or bust. Not optional. The narrative. Avoid moderation. Kevin Roberts' credo. 1. Ready, fire, aim. 2. If it ain't broke, break it. 3. Hire crazies. 4. Ask dumb questions. 5. Pursue failure. 6. Lead, follow, or get out of the way. 7. Spread confusion. 8. Ditch your office. 9. Read odd stuff. 10. Avoid moderation. Mr. Roberts was most recently CEO of Saatchi & Saatchi. His book Love Marks is on my best business books ever shortlist. Insanely great. Steve Jobs' new product standard. Radically thrilling. BMW ad for a new model. Astonish me, Sergei Diaghilev to a lead dancer. Build something great, Hiroshi Yamauchi, Nintendo president, to a senior game designer. Mech it immortal, David Ogilvy, to a copywriter. Every project we undertake starts with the same question. How can we do what has never been done before? Stuart Hornery, Lend-Lease. Let us create such a building that future generations will take us for lunatics, the church hierarchs at Seville. You can't behave in a calm, rational manner. You've got to be out there on the lunatic fringe. Jack Welch. We are crazy. We should only do something when people say it is crazy. If people say something is good, it means someone else is already doing it. Hajime Matari, former CEO, Canon. We all agree your theory is crazy. The question, which divides us, is whether it is crazy enough to have a chance of being correct. Niels Bohr to Wolfgang Pauli. There's no use trying, said Alice. One cannot believe impossible things. I dare say you haven't had much practice, said the Queen. When I was your age, I always did it for half an hour a day. Why, sometimes I've believed as many as 6 impossible things before breakfast. Lewis Carroll. To hell with well-behaved. Recently, a young mother asked for advice. What, she wanted to know, was she to do with a 7-year-old who was obstreperous, outspoken, and inconveniently willful? Keep her, I replied. The suffragettes refused to be polite in demanding what they wanted, or grateful for getting what they deserved. Works for me. Anna Quindlen, Newsweek. The reasonable man adapts himself to the world. The unreasonable one persists in trying to adapt the world to himself. Therefore, all progress depends upon the unreasonable man. George Bernard Shaw, Man and Superman, The Revolutionist's Handbook. Life is not a journey to the grave with the intention of arriving safely in one pretty and well-preserved piece, but to skid across the line broadside, thoroughly used up, worn out, leaking oil, shouting, Geronimo. Bill McKenna, Pro Motorcycle Racer. Moderate times call for moderate responses. Immoderate times call for immoderate responses. Geronimo. There you have it. Thank you and good luck. This is Tom Peters. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of The Excellence Dividend, Meeting the Tech Tide with Work That Wows and Jobs That Last. This program was directed by Danny Campbell, executive producer Dan Musselman. Text, copyright 2018 by Thomas J. Peters. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.